If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come fly with me, let's fly away. Come fly with me, let's float down to Peru. In Llama Land, there's a one-man band, and he'll toot his flute for you. Come fly with me, let's take off in the blue. Once I get you up there, where the air is red.
Oh yeah, a little bit of Frankie Boy. Come fly with me. Wouldn't it be great to be able to flap your arms and go up in the air? I've had dreams. I guess maybe all of us have had dreams where you can fly, you know, like Superman. You just kind of will yourself up in the air. Interesting. Anyway, enough about me. Good morning, and welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. This is about us. I am Paul Molloy, and along with my buddy Big Ed Davis, thank you for joining us on this Wednesday, June the 5th. We have a lot going on, as you probably know. In a few minutes, Devin Watkins of the Competitive Enterprise Institute is going to be here, and we're going to talk with him about the Supreme Court's unanimous ruling protecting free speech rights. It's in a case involving the National Rifle Association. It's a very important case. So stay tuned for that just a few minutes. And while his son enters day two of his gun trial in Delaware, there is growing concern about the cognitive health of Joe Biden. We are going to talk about the latest signs of decline in our president. And a major restaurant chain in California shuts down 50 locations there on the heels of a new minimum wage law that specifically involves restaurants, fast food chains. We're going to give you the details on that as well. And in our ultimate top 10, we gave you the top 10 cities for deadly car crashes in our last show. So today, the top 10 states for deadly car crash. Let's see if you happen to live in one of them. Anyway, so the border crisis was addressed by Joe Biden yesterday. President Biden's announcement of a new bar for border migrants was met with immediate criticism, both from his left and from his right. Republicans are calling it a stunt. Some Democrats are saying it betrays migrants. How are you going to win? How are you going to win? Biden's executive order would suspend migrant entry once it exceeds 2,500 people a day over a seven-day period. Now, it would stay in effect. Now, we've got to write this down. Ed, you better write all this down so you know how this works. Biden's executive order stays in effect until 2 weeks after there has been a seven-day average of less than 1,500 people. Okay? Officials say it would make it easier for immigration officers to quickly remove individuals who do not have a legal basis to remain in the United States. Now, the order does have exceptions. It does not apply to visa holders. It does not apply to unaccompanied kids. It does not apply to victims of a severe form of trafficking or those with an acute medical emergency or an imminent life or safety threat. It also will not apply to those using the, and don't tell me why, or ask me why, it will not apply to those using the CBP1 app. I don't even know what the CBP1 app is. I will rely on my technical wizard associate. Ed, do you know what the CBP1 app, and if so, do you use one?
I believe that was an app set up by the administration if you're in another country to fast forward you your way in.
Okay. I think
in other words,
right.
Like make an appointment or,
okay,
you know,
yeah,
let them know when you're going to charge through the gate.
How do these border security officials know any of this? How is that going to work?
Take the word for it?
I mean, this is the most ridiculous. This is so complicated that people are going to ignore it.
When you go to apply for a driver's license here, you have to have proof of ID or a Social Security card or get on an airplane. There, they just take their word for it. What's your name? Okay, here you go.
Yeah, where are you from?
They don't have any documents.
I'm from Nicaragua.
Yeah.
I'm from Turkey.
Come on in. What's your name? Come on
that's
in.
That's about it. So, House Speaker Mike Johnson says this. The order was a desperate political stunt to try and stabilize Biden's plummeting poll numbers ahead of the November election. I think he just nailed it with that one sentence. That's what it's all about. Stephen Miller, who was a senior White House official under Trump, was even more scathing. He calls it a pro-invasion PR, illegal migration executive order. The order also picked up criticism from Democrats in both chambers, and they're concerned on the other side that it harms those fleeing persecution and violence. The ACLU is very much against it. But that brings us to Joe Biden's mental acuity right now. I want to mention it because he gave that that presentation yesterday. And you have to listen to him because he starts to falter as he's talking. You almost can't pick up every word he says. President Biden is showing signs of poor cognitive performance in private meetings now with congressional lawmakers as his age and mental acuity continue to come into question ahead of the November election. Now, Biden is 81. He is the oldest person to ever be president. He has faced skepticism from voters and Republican lawmakers about his ability to function, to do the job. Many Republicans and even some Democrats said the president is showing his age in private meetings. The Wall Street Journal spoke with 45 lawmakers and administration officials about the president's mental performance. Most who were critical of Biden's performance were Republicans. That's not surprising. Although some Democrats said that the president showed his age in several exchanges. These interviewees participated in meetings with Biden or were briefed on them contemporaneously, including those who did not express concern about the president. But as an example, when meeting with congressional leaders in January regarding more aid to Ukraine, Biden spoke so softly at times that people were not able to hear him. Five people familiar with the meeting said the president read from notes. This is in a private meeting. He's reading from notes to make obvious points. Then he would pause for extended periods of time and even close his eyes for so long that people in the meeting wondered if he had tuned out. So, come on. Let's put it this way. They don't send him in front of the cameras unless, relatively speaking, he is at his best at that time, right? I mean, it's almost like dusting him off and shaking him and saying, okay, now you're going to go out there. All you got to do, Joe, is just read from the teleprompter, okay? And then when you're finished, turn left because the exit is to your left. Don't turn right because there's no exit on the right. So, you know, they put that on his notes and everything. And then, you know, so he reads, like yesterday, he reads his new border policy. And if you listen to him, come on, you know that, you know, he's... His volume goes in and out and up and down.
There are people that think you're going to get another 4.5 years out of that guy.
There's just no way. I mean, you just got to be honest with it. No. He will not survive another 4 years. He won't.
No.
He's not going to be able to function. Okay. We are going to take our break. When we come back, Devin Watkins of the Competitive Enterprise Institute is going to join us. We're going to talk about the Supreme Court's unanimous decision that would protect free speech rights in a case involving the National Rifle Association.
is the Tantalk Radio Network.
For years, we've been telling you that Andrew's Master Barbershop is the premier men's barbershop in Tampa Bay. Tops in great haircuts, tops in price. Well, now that it's summertime, Andrew and the gang have brand new hours. They're now open Tuesday through Friday, 9 to 6 p.m. Again, that's Tuesday through Friday, 9 to 6. So give them a try, men. Andrew's Master Barbershop, it's located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. That's on Overcash Drive, just north of 580 Main Street. Call first for your appointment, guys. 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773. Andrew's Master Barbershop.
Arborlife Tree Service is Tampa Bay's finest tree service company. From trimming, pruning, fertilizing, to grinding and removal, you get an experienced ISA certified and veteran owned firm that can do any tree job, large or small. With our fully equipped fleet and trained crew members, we care for trees of all sizes, whether you're government, contractor, business, or homeowner. Don't trust just anyone with a chainsaw. Call Arborlife Tree Service at 727-330-1999 for a quick and free estimate. That's 727-330-1999. Arborlife Tree Service. They go out on a limb for you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Back Wednesday, and delighted to have Devin Watkins join us. He is an attorney at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and we're going to talk with Devin about a unanimous Supreme Court ruling. A lot of people, because of what's been going on, you know, all around the world these days, might not have even picked up on this, but the Supreme Court last Thursday unanimously ruled in favor of free speech rights. It was a case, the National Rifle Association versus, and I hope I pronounce this right, it's either Vulo or Volo. It was a case in which a CEI, the Competitive Enterprise Institute, actually had an amicus brief. In other words, they had a little dog in the fight. Devin, welcome back to Freedom Works.
Hi, I'm glad to be here.
Tell us, Devin, because most of us are not familiar with this particular case, but it involves the National Rifle Association and I guess a New York State regulator over some pressure by the government there against banks and insurance companies that were involved in some way with the NRA?
Yeah, so the NRA basically sold this NRA-branded insurance to its members. And in doing so, because it doesn't normally provide insurance, it had these affiliate banks that it worked closely with. Now, the New York City government didn't like NRA's advocacy on Second Amendment issues, and so it tried to do what it could to harm the NRA, and it did so, or at least that's the accusation at this point in a motion to dismiss, which has to be presumed true at this point in the in litigation. So according to the NRA, the New York government threatened its bank partners to break ties with the NRA and threatened to use its enforcement power to fine them or otherwise harass their businesses if it didn't break off their association.
Got it. I mean, to me, I can see why the Supreme Court would unanimously rule in favor of the NRA. That is definitely, it sounds to me like a complete violation of the, I don't know, the free speech rights of the banks. They can connect with whomever they want, it would seem to me. Tell me, how did Volo rule, what was their argument against the NRA as to why they, this should be allowed?
They claimed that they were not trying to just stop NRA speech, that instead it was the New York government expressing its own speech about how horrible the NRA was and how these banks should break off their association with it.
Gosh, that sounds kind of weak. So the Supreme Court unanimously reaffirmed that the government can't intervene in this. And so these banks and these insurance companies are allowed to continue their association. And I guess the NRA uses these banks and insurance companies to provide, is this a right to provide some services to their members?
Yes. So there is some insurance related to self-defense activities, representing their members if they get certain kinds of either prosecution or litigation, and providing them with attorneys and things like that. That's the kind of insurance I believe that they were providing. And so hopefully in the future, NRA will still be able to provide the services it wants that other people are able to provide.
Yeah.
There were certain technical problems under New York law that will mean that these programs probably have to be changed going forward. But at least once they're properly done lawfully, this should be done in the future and shouldn't be blocked by the New York government.
Was there anything similar going on in other states like this against the NRA that you're aware of?
There have been a lot of jawboning that the federal government and state governments have done, not specifically against the NRA that I'm aware of, although it wouldn't exactly surprise me. There's a lot of hostility to the NRA in certain states. But I know that New York was very special in how they were specifically going after the NRA very directly and somewhat publicly. There were certain tweets by the governor that basically said that their goal was to financially shut down the NRA.
Got it. We're talking with Devin Watkins. He is an attorney at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. We're talking about a case involving the National Rifle Association. And go ahead.
I said the New York City government. I should have said the New York State government.
Right. No, no problem. So it's called NRA versus Volo. Who is Volo?
The financial regulator for the state of New York.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So he was bringing down this pressure on these banks and these insurance companies. Was the offshoot that if they didn't detach, that the state of New York was going to start to regulate, over-regulate, new-regulate the insurance companies and the banks? Is this what they wanted to do? In other words, they wanted to intimidate the banks and insurance companies with additional regulations?
It was more about enforcement actions rather than additional regulation. So there were some minor issues, and they said basically, we will waive these things, and you don't have to pay any fines if you break your association with the NRA. But if you don't, we're going to issue millions and millions of dollars of fines.
Okay, I got it. Now, Competitive Enterprise Institute had what was called an amicus brief. Can you tell our listeners what that means?
That's like a friend of the court brief. It's an outside person that's not a party to the case that is presenting the court with some precedent and case law and argument that might assist the court in properly resolving the case.
Mm-hmm. And it was a unanimous decision. Did anybody, who wrote the majority decision for the court on the, I should say, who wrote the unanimous, who was the leading writer of the majority decision?
Justice Sotomayor wrote the majority opinion. There was a concurrence by Justice Gorsuch and Justice Jackson.
Got it. Very interesting. From my way of thinking, Justice Sotomayor is one of the most liberal of the justices, and even she realized that this was a violation of the free speech rights. You know, it makes me feel rather comfortable about our Supreme Court that they can come together in something like this, which seems to be so obviously stomping down on free speech rights, and come up with this. I got to bring this up too, Devin. It seems like the state of New York has been at the forefront of all kinds of news recently, if you think about it, right? We got the Trump trial in Manhattan. We've got some security issues on the subways. We got the
what do you call it, with the mayor of New York City and the sanctuary city situation. New York is certainly getting a lot of attention. I'm not so sure that they want all of that attention.
Yeah, there's lots of problems in New York right now that they're trying to resolve, but having a lot of difficulty in doing so.
Yeah, exactly right. So, and of course, the Supreme Court's got a lot on its plate right now, but this allows the National Rifle Association to continue its relationship. The NRA is apparently no friend of Democrats generally. It tends to be more of a conservative, I don't know how you would put it, but it seems that the National Rifle Association is not the friend of people that want to establish stricter gun laws around the country.
That's definitely true.
Yeah, I don't know.
I would not say that the NRA is opposed to Democrats.
Oh, no,
I
think
the NRA for a long time supported Manchin, Senator Manchin, and a variety of other
absolutely.
Democrats.
Absolutely, yeah. I didn't mean to misspeak about Democrats. I shouldn't have said it that way. But those who want stricter gun laws tend to go after the National Rifle Association, although it seems to me that the NRA also wants gun laws to protect people. They don't want to be in existence and allow mayhem. They're kind of the opposite way. They are there to establish the right of people to protect themselves and to have the ability to follow the Second Amendment. Go ahead.
The NRA has done a lot of good stuff, especially including stuff on the Second Amendment. Although in the big case, D.C. v. Heller, they actually opposed bringing that case, oddly enough. They thought it was too soon to bring that case, that the court wouldn't agree with them. And then the Supreme Court affirmed the individual right under the Second Amendment.
Yeah, now Heller, was that also something out of New York State? I can't remember where that came from, or D.C.?
No, that was D.C.
D.C., okay. And that involved the right for people to own firearms?
At home, yes.
At home, got it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I couldn't remember all of the details. And the Supreme Court reaffirmed that right, basically.
Yes,
so that you could, the local regulations in D.C. at the time were stifling that right, correct? And in that Hiller decision, the Supreme Court said, no, they have a right to own guns in their homes.
Yeah, I believe, if I remember right, the D.C. law at the time required that the gun be inoperable or disassembled at home or something like that. And the Supreme Court reaffirmed the individual right for people to own a firearm at home and be able to bear it.
Got it. Now, normally the Competitive Enterprise Institute has to be very careful because it does not take sides politically. It is a pro-business organization. So,
I wouldn't quite say that.
Okay.
We are a pro-free market organization.
Pro-free market.
We want the businesses to compete against each other fairly in the marketplace. We're not pro-business or anti-consumer or something like that. We just want everyone to have a fair opportunity in the marketplace.
Right. I use the word business because competitive enterprise, you know, the idea of the freedom to go about, you know, producing products and this, that, and the other thing. But this is good news. Good news, the unanimous.
Yes, very
really.
Good news.
Yeah. Devin, a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so very much for finding the time to come on, and I hope we'll talk down the road.
Yes, maybe once the decision we're representing in more of the United States comes down, maybe we can come back on and talk about that.
Yes, I'll look forward to that for sure. Thank you, Devin.
Sounds good.
All right, sir. Bye-bye. Devin Watkins. All right, we're going to take our break. And when we come back, among other things, a major restaurant chain in California shuts down 50 of its locations on the heels of a new minimum wage law in the Golden State. We are going to give you the details.
is the Tantalk Radio Network.
For years, we've been telling you that Andrew's Master Barbershop is the premier men's barbershop in Tampa Bay. Tops in great haircuts, tops in price. Well, now that it's summertime, Andrew and the gang have brand new hours. They're now open Tuesday through Friday, 9 to 6 p.m. Again, that's Tuesday through Friday, 9 to 6. So give them a try, men. Andrew's Master Barbershop, it's located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. That's on Overcash Drive, just north of 580 Main Street. Call first for your appointment, guys. 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773. Andrew's Master Barbershop.
Arbor Life Tree Service is Tampa Bay's finest tree service company. From trimming, pruning, fertilizing, to grinding and removal, you get an experienced ISA certified and veteran owned firm that can do any tree job, large or small. With our fully equipped fleet and trained crew members, we care for trees of all sizes, whether you're government, contractor, business, or homeowner. Don't trust just anyone with a chainsaw. Call Arbor Life Tree Service at 727-330-1999 for a quick and free estimate. That's 727-330-1999. Arbor Life Tree Service. They go out on a limb for you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Freedom Works, thank you so very much for being with us. So I said earlier that the Hunter Biden gun trial is in day two. It's actually in day three. And they got somebody on the stand right now. The defense attorney for Hunter Biden is attempting to cast doubt on Hunter Biden's references to drugs in text messages around the time that he purchased a gun. And this is back in the fall of 2018. Apparently, this follows the gun purchase in which Hunter texted Hallie Biden that he was, quote, waiting for a dealer named Mookie. All right, good old Mookie had to come on so he could go get his gun. You know, the interesting thing is that they got the computer with, and they've also got the book. Is it not a book that he wrote? He basically claimed have to do is read passages from the book and say the prosecution rests when it comes to whether or not he was trying to purchase a gun and did purchase a gun when he was drug user.
I'm sure his defense will be, well, I was on crack when I wrote that.
That's it. So therefore, you can't trust anything I said in my book.
Yeah.
Okay. Very interesting. Hey, we have the proprietor of the Barber Poll with us, Andrew Ceraci. And Andrew, there's so much going on. We also have the Attorney General who was testifying before a House committee trying to protect himself in the way that they were handling the treatment of Donald Trump, Merrick Garland. So I don't know, what do you want to talk about this morning?
Well, Paul, I was pretty proud of Matt Gaetz yesterday, to be honest with you.
Oh, yes.
Because he handed Merrick Garland his rear end in a handbasket yesterday. I don't know if you saw that excerpt or not.
I did.
But listen, that guy is sitting there lying through his teeth, and you can tell.
Yeah.
And no question about it. He didn't know. He didn't send the main prosecutor there. He says, what, did the prosecutor take a lower-paying job just because? You know?
Yeah.
So no, that guy, right. He's lying through his freaking teeth.
Yes.
Biden knows about this whole thing. Garland knew about it. It's ridiculous what's going on.
Yeah.
They're so afraid. Now you even see the people, the Democrats are coming out saying, well, you know, we're in a closed room with Biden and we can see him starting to slip.
Yeah, we were talking about that.
They're starting to set up, you know, to put in either Gavin Newsom or little Michelle Obama.
I want to go back for a moment to the Garland testimony because Republican Congressman Tom Massey, he's a Republican from Kentucky, he pressed Garland on the constitutionality of appointing Jack Smith as that special counsel in that Trump trial. Garland testified, and this was before the House Judiciary Committee, they talked about Smith's appointment to oversee the classified documents case. and the January 6th probe into Trump. It says here, Massey posed this question to Merrick Garland. What gives you the authority to appoint a special counsel to create, you created an office in the U.S. government that does not exist without an authorization from Congress. So, you know, in other words, how did you come about finding Jack Smith to become the special counsel in this hearing? I mean, he was into it up to his neck, Merrick Garland was, in making sure the right
kind of...
Yeah,
Paul,
yeah,
Matt Gaetz also got him yesterday. He says, well, you were a judge. He goes, let me ask you a question. Did you ever give donations to a party, you know, and sit there and be a judge on one of their... Oh, no, that was against all of our policies. We wouldn't donate. Well, how come this judge was sitting there knowing he donated that? Well, we have nothing to do with that because that's a state. And Matt Gaetz just tore him apart.
Yeah.
Man. I mean, the guy's lying through his teeth.
Yeah.
Well, actually, he said there was a law against federal judges.
He said it was federal judges that were not able to do. But I can't see. But
still, the same concept.
Exactly.
It's the same concept.
Yeah, and what's going on right now in Manhattan with that judge who was donating, although it was not a lot of money, he did donate to the Biden campaign. His daughter is involved in Democratic causes. It's so obvious.
You've
been paid $4 million, Paul.
Yeah, this is going to be, once it gets to the right court, it's going to turn quickly.
It's got to go to the Supreme Court away. They need to skip everything and go right to it.
Can you imagine if this was a black man on trial, and they put on a jury a white supremacist judge that known ties to the KKK, and a white jury with members that are known to the KKK? Can you imagine that going through?
Yeah.
No.
No, I mean, yes, I agree with you.
You have to have an impartial jury and a judge.
That's right. No question about it.
And
no
I
question
think America knows that simply by giving him over $200 million in donations the next day.
Yeah.
You know, Paul, let me tell you this. If the trials that were going on with Trump and with Hunter Biden, if their last names weren't Biden and Trump, there would be no trials.
Another thing about the Hunter Biden trial... It's a sympathetic jury. Everybody knows one another in that Delaware town. And so all of those people that are on that jury, and then Joe Biden's wife is there eyeballing the jury. She probably knows every one of them by their first name.
And she's the stepmom.
But I could tell you this one. I wouldn't mind my ex-wife testifying against me.
Well, I'm not sure.
She's supposed to be on the stand today, his ex-wife.
Okay, now, you're talking about Hunter's wife. I'm talking about Joe Biden's wife is there eyeballing
the jury.
Yeah,
She's there.
They got
the
whole family there.
Him.
Yeah.
But Jill's stepmom, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
That is the stepmother.
And I would ask her how many trials she's been to before this.
Yes.
You know, also Hunter Biden hated her. They got statements of him calling her all kinds of names and saying she's this and that. You know, she must have kissed and made up.
Oh, they've made nice since then. What about some of the ex-wives, etc., of Hunter Biden? How are they going to test? Didn't one of them, or was it the girlfriend that tossed his gun in the dumpster?
Yeah, like I said, I wouldn't want any one of my ex-wives testifying against me for anything. Believe me, I'd be running and hiding.
I know. So his wife is named Melissa. His lawyer is named Abby Lowell. Actually, I even heard conservatives say that Abby Lowell is a good lawyer. I mean, he's the kind of guy you want, that he's very good at what he does. So, you know what they're going to try to do? They're going to try to say that technically, Hunter Biden is not technically a drug user. You watch. They're going to try to spin the definition of what constitutes somebody that's a consistent drug user. Go ahead.
What they're going to say is he was definitely an addict. And he didn't know what he was doing at the time, but now he's overcome all those addictions.
Yeah, but
that's what they're going to try and do.
Yeah, but now they've got to go back and say that when he was using crack cocaine and trying to get a gun, he was not really. They're going to try to tell you he was not really technically a drug addict. I'm telling you.
But Paul, no matter what, he's going to be found innocent. We can sit here and argue all we want. He will be found innocent, so, you know, why waste our time arguing?
I think you're probably right.
The fix is in.
Okay.
He'll never see a day in jail. He'll never have to pay a fine. They're going to slap him on his head and say, Hunter, you better be a good boy now. Daddy has had enough. Daddy's got his own problems. He doesn't know where the hell he is.
Hey, I want to talk to you about your favorite topic, Donald Trump. Trump's defense attorneys are requesting that your favorite judge, Juan Merchan, the Manhattan judge, terminate the gag order restricting Trump from speaking about the witnesses and the case now that the whole thing's over with. It should be. Yeah. Citing the upcoming election and the first debate against Biden later this month, as well as the First Amendment right of the former president and his supporters. In other words, there is a distance between now and when the punishment comes down from this judge. And during this period of time, apparently, the judge wants to keep the gag order going.
Well, you know, Paul, what I heard that the Republicans are trying to do is move the date of their convention.
Oh, really?
Because now that they have that logged in on the 11th, you know they're going to try and play with them 2 days before the convention.
In July.
So I heard they're trying to move it to the 4th of July.
The 4th of July?
Yep.
Okay, move it up.
Move it up. Oh. This way it's before the conviction, and that'll throw a wrench into what he wants to do, you understand?
And they're going to do it right on the 4th of July.
These are the rumors that I hear.
All right.
I mean, you know, you never know. That'd be a smart move, to be honest with
Maybe
you.
Maybe it would be. Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
Now, Trump's team is repeatedly appealing this gag order. Let's see here. The other thing is, do you think there's any chance, Andrew, that this judge would come up with jail time for Trump?
Of course.
You do?
Yep.
Well, of course.
You
they want
too,
a picture
Ed?
Of him in an orange suit, even if it's for one day.
Yeah?
Of course.
Wow.
Well, this guy, you know, he doesn't realize, but like I told you before, he better have a lot of Secret Service protection around him.
Did you see how much money he's raking in, Donald Trump, now?
Oh, maybe $200 million in 3 days.
Oh, my
what
God.
What does that tell you what the people are thinking?
I know.
Okay?
Yeah.
People are fed up, Paul. They see what's going on. Again, I still can't understand how supposedly 40% of the American public think Biden's doing a good job.
I think 70% of the American public don't know what Biden's talking about when he opens his mouth.
Exactly. Well, they don't know what they're talking about when they open theirs either.
No,
I got news.
No, but I'm saying, you know, he's gotten to the point, as we said, about his cognitive ability. Even when he's reading from the teleprompter and they're propping him up there, he slurs his words. It's almost like, is he not taking his medication, or is he just getting worse and worse?
I think my brother Angelo is right about the upcoming debate. I think Biden's going to get out of it by saying, hey, I have no need to debate a convicted felon.
Yeah, there may be a possibility. You're right.
Yeah,
about
but he'd
that.
Still look like a coward if he did that.
Yeah. Oh, everybody would know.
Like probably already know he is. Yeah. I mean, what do you mean looks like?
Yeah.
Did you see today he's in France? And he already put the lid on it this morning. He's not going to do nothing today. No public appearances or anything. They don't even want to show him in public.
No.
Because they say he is declining so fast, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. And like we're talking about, it seems to me that at that Democratic convention in August, and that will be after, if indeed he does debate, the word is that they being those people that are the puppeteers, want to see how Biden handles himself in the debate, which is probably not going to be very good.
No.
And then they're going to make a decision and go into that convention with the idea that they're going to find somebody else.
And
well, Paul, you know, they're going to have him so jacked up on something if he does that. The way he is right now, they'll have him so jacked up, he'll probably drop with a heart attack.
Well, that's true, too.
I mean, you know, you got to watch that stuff, too. And they had him jacked up when he did his State of the Union address. We all know that.
Yeah. I think we've said this before, I think it's elder abuse. The puppeteers that are allowing him to wander around like this.
It should be. That, you know, not only elder abuse, look what they're doing to the country,
Paul.
Oh,
God, it's horrible.
Look what they're doing to the country. Let's be real here. They just want to control the power. If Barack Obama is behind this, which I believe he is, and I believe
sure
the Clintons
is.
Are behind it, you know, all the elite Democrats are behind this. And I don't even doubt some of the elite Republicans are behind it. You know what I'm saying? trying to keep Trump.
I don't trust anybody. I don't trust too many of them in Washington anymore. I'm getting more and more cynical, even about the Republicans and what their motivations are.
One more quick thing on Hunter Biden. Would you think the guy is broke by about now?
He should be.
You know what his net worth is? $230 million.
He has
an annual income of $20 million.
Where's he getting all this money? Amazing?
I don't know, but you want to question on Trump on paying off Stormy Daniels.
I know.
Look at the Biden family. And you want to go after Eric Trump?
There was one guy that said he's broke now because he's the one that bought $6 million worth of Hunter Biden's paintings, you know.
Wasn't there a lawyer that was funding Hunter Biden?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You got it. Like $6 million. He says, I'm now broke. And here you got Hunter Rick, $20 million a year. And what? What is he doing?
Is he still getting payoffs from overseas?
He's probably getting a kickback from the Ukraine.
Maybe that's what that whole tax thing is in California.
So the family, all of those LLC corporations, they what, about 16 of them now?
I mean,
all those Biden LLC with the family. So they're still they're still funneling money through all of
that. He's a genius for a crackhead that doesn't know what he's doing.
Well, as a matter of fact, you got to give him some credit for all the money that he's been able to, you know, suck out of these other countries.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
I mean, if you think about it, however they have ponied up this LLC corporation network, it's so complex that you can't seem to figure out who's paying what.
Did you see where Zelensky is going to have a private meeting with Macron and all in France. Yeah, the president of France,
President
Zelensky from the Ukraine. They're going to have a meeting while he's in France over there. And you know what's really amazing, Paul, is it's the 80th anniversary of the Normandy invasion tomorrow,
right? June the 6th.
Okay, that was my father took two bullets for this country that day and survived.
Wow, God love him, yes.
Okay, and you know what my father always said? He said, let me tell you something. Oh, they also said today that the French Macron, he's very skeptical. He does not want Trump to be the president of the United States again. You know why? Because he told him to start paying your fair share. You guys haven't done nothing.
You're talking about NATO payments.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yes.
And you know what my father also said? He always said, he goes, let me tell you about the country of France. He goes, when we invaded Normandy and we took it over, he says they loved us for 1 week.
Yeah.
Then they told us to get the hell out.
So you don't think much of the French.
I'm not saying anything. I'm just telling you what I heard.
I know. I know. There has
Let's face it. The way that France has always been run and the way they never stood up to anything. They always ran the other way.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. The United States saved the bacon of France twice, World War I and World War II.
That's right.
And a lot of our guys are buried over there on French soil.
7,000, wasn't it?
Something like
that. Killed that day.
I'm glad you brought up D-Day and the fact that it's 80 years tomorrow. Yeah. 80 years.
That's what I told my wife this morning. I says, do you realize it's 80 years that my father took two bullets for this country?
I got to make sure to hang out. I know you always hang out your flag. I got to make sure I hang out my flag.
No, I got my flag out, but it might not be the way you want to see it.
No, I know. It's upside down still, isn't it?
That's right.
Well, you're a true patriot. You always have been, Andrew. I always appreciate you coming on and giving us your feeling. I know you speak from the heart. You're true.
Paul, I love my country.
Yes, you do. You really do.
I love my country, my friend, and I hope it goes back to the way it was and we get rid of all this nonsense crap that's going on.
Yeah, you and me both. We appreciate it, Andrew. Thank you so much. I'll be talking with you, God willing, on Friday.
You got it, buddy. Have a good day.
And the same to you. Okay. The Master Barber. All right, we're going to take our final break. When we come back, the top 10 states for deadly car crashes.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Arbor Life Tree Service is Tampa Bay's finest tree service company. From trimming, pruning, fertilizing, to grinding and removal, you get an experienced ISA certified and veteran owned firm that can do any tree job, large or small. With our fully equipped fleet and trained crew members, we care for trees of all sizes, whether you're government, contractor, business, or homeowner. Don't trust just anyone with a chainsaw. Call Arbor Life Tree Service at 727-330-1999 for a quick and free estimate. That's 727-330-1999. Arbor Life Tree Service. They go out on a limb for you.
For years, we've been telling you that Andrew's Master Barbershop is the premier men's barbershop in Tampa Bay. Tops in great haircuts, tops in price. Well, now that it's summertime, Andrew and the gang have brand new hours. They're now open Tuesday through Friday, 9 to 6 p.m. Again, that's Tuesday through Friday, 9 to 6. So give them a try, men. Andrew's Master Barbershop, it's located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. That's on Overcash Drive, just north of 580 Main Street. Call first for your appointment, guys. 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773. Andrew's Master Barbershop.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back for the final segment of Freedom Works, and we thank you so very much for being with us. By the way, we are here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the great Tantalk Radio Network. But if you can't listen live, thanks to Big Ed, go to our website, OurFreedomWorks.com, O-U-R, OurFreedomWorks.com. Look for the podcast link at the top of the website. Click on it. Ed's got all of our shows on podcast. And we want to just make sure that you are aware of that. You can listen to any of our programs at your leisure, OurFreedomWorks.com. So Ed's pointing up to breaking news right now, the first manned launch of the Starliner spacecraft. There it goes, Ed, just disappeared behind the clouds.
Yeah, no, this is SpaceX. This is their new vehicle that they're sending up to the space station.
Wow.
This is the first manned one. They send an unmanned one as a test. And
beautiful shots. They got all these different camera angles of this launch, too. It's called the Starliner spacecraft. And that's from our friend Elon Musk. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I love it when the boosters come back to Earth. That's just phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know, what they save in that.
Yep.
But
look at the cameras. Yeah. They got cameras
all over
on the outside of the spacecraft. So you're actually now getting a shot as it's leaving the Earth's atmosphere.
Yep.
How classy is that? All right, Ed. I promised that we would talk real quickly about this California restaurant chain. It's called Rubio's Coastal Grill. It's a California-Mexican restaurant chain. It has announced the closing of 48 of its restaurants in California. The LA Times reports the chain decided to shutter nearly one-third of its restaurants after a review of the operations and the current business climate. Now, here's the deal. The decision comes 2 months after California implemented a $20 minimum wage for fast food employees. This is not the first chain in California that has been closing its restaurants. Other restaurant chains have been struggling as well. Red Lobster last month announced that it would also be closing restaurants, but it's not just in California. It's actually under, I think, some economic issues. It's going to auction off over 50 locations nationwide. And, you know, California and Florida have Red Lobster chains.
You know, Governor, California, Gavin Newsom owns, I believe it's a couple of restaurants that fall just under the requirements of the $20 an hour.
Uh-huh.
Just under. And people went after him, so what about it? Well, although he owns them, he has nothing to do with any day-to-day operations.
Yeah.
Now, however, his daughter is chief executive officer.
Okay. You know, that's interesting you say that. The wage involving these chains applies to workers in fast food chains that have at least 60 or more locations around the nation.
Yes.
Very interesting. Okay, time for our top 10. And the last time we had our top 10, it was the top 10 U.S. cities for deadly car crashes. So we've decided to give you the top 10 states for deadly car crashes. This comes from Consumer Affairs. The data comes from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration's 2022 Fatality Analysis reporting system. And so this is going to come, as I say, from year 2022. That's the most recent year that they have these this data. So here we go. The top 10 states for deadly car crashes. Number 10, it's Arizona. They have 16.08 fatal car crashes per 100,000 people. Okay? And the total that year of fatal car crashes there, 1,183. Number 9, this one surprises me. How do you in Montana end up number 9? There aren't that many cars in Montana. It's a huge
winter
state.
Driving.
You can't find another car when you're driving down. Do you hit trees?
Winter driving?
Yeah, I
guess
so.
Interstate pileups?
Yeah, I'm sure. 16.39 fatal car crashes per 100,000. Number 8, Tennessee. Tennessee, 17.23 fatal car crashes per 100,000. The state had 1,215 total fatal car crashes that year. Number 7. Hey, by the way, a lot of southern states. Alabama, 17.99 fatals per 100,000, 913 total fatal accidents. Number 6. Louisiana, 18.56 fatal car crashes per 100,000, a total number 852. Number 5. Arkansas, they're all around the same area. Yeah. Arkansas, 19.14 fatals per 100,000, total 583 crashes. Number 4, how about South Carolina? 19.29, you know, they must be drinking too much moonshine down
moonshine.
Here. 19.29 per 100,000, 1,019 total fatal crashes. Number 3, we go outside of the South and out West. New Mexico, 10.83. That's not right. It's got to be 19. I made a mistake. 19.83 fatal car crashes per 100,000. 419 total. Number 2. This is another state like Montana. Wyoming. What's going on with all these people out there? Wyoming, 20.3 fatal car crashes per 100,000. Now, they don't have a lot of people in Wyoming, so the total number of fatals was 118. Number 1. I forgot to ask you.
I don't know. Jeez, could be anywhere.
Let's go to Nevada. Hit. Huh?
Let's go to Nevada.
Okay. You can go to Nevada. I'm going to Mississippi.
South.
Yeah, it's Mississippi. 21.97, almost 22 fatal car crashes per 100,000 people. Total number of fatal car crashes in Mississippi, 646.
Wow.
So, don't go to Mississippi in a car. It's very, very dangerous.
But your insurance is paid up.
I'll tell you what. All right. Thanks so much for listening. We will be back on Friday. Meantime, drive carefully. And remember, freedom works.